The droid beeped agreement and wheeled toward the dropship's rear door. Zerid looked to Aaron and gave it another try.
Reconsider, Aaron.
He stood directly before her, forcing her to see him, to hear him.
Come with me. Please.
He smiled, trying to make light.
We'll start a farm on Dantooine, just like I said.
She smiled, seemingly amused by the thought, and he was pleased to see it.
I can't, Zerid. You'll make a good farmer, though. I'm going to find the Twi'lek and...
She stopped in mid-sentence, her eyes fixed on something over Zerid's shoulder. He whirled around to see the Twi'lek descending the near shuttle's landing ramp, a rucksack thrown over her shoulder. Two Imperial soldiers in plasteel breastplates flanked to either side. Each had a blaster rifle slung over his shoulder. All three wore breathing masks. They had not left their ship when the alarm sounded, had instead just donned masks. Perhaps there was something on the shuttle they were unwilling to leave unguarded. Everyone froze, and for a moment no one moved. Then all at once, everyone moved. The Twi'lek dropped her rucksack, her eyes wide behind the lens of her mask, and went for her blasters. The soldiers cursed in muffled tones, unslung their rifles, and tried to bring them to bear. Aaron ignited her lightsaber. Zerid, one of his blasters still in hand, fired at the soldier on the right. Two shots screamed into the soldier's chest. Armor ablated in a puff of smoke, and the force of the impact knocked the man from the ramp, turned his mask sideways on his face. He hit the deck and lay there, scrabbling for cover. Zerid fired again, and a hit to the man's midsection made him go still. The Twi'lek got her blasters clear and fired 2, 4, 6 shots at Zerid. Aaron slid before him, and her blade deflected all of the shots, two of them back at the other soldier, which opened small holes in the soldier's mask. He fell forward onto the ramp, dead.
Get out of here, Zerid!
Aaron said over her shoulder. She started walking toward the shuttle, toward the Twi'lek.
Aaron!
Zerid called, but she did not hear him. He imagined she heard only the voice of her dead master now. Zerid realized it was no longer his fight. He holstered his blaster and watched. There was nothing else he could do. Aaron strode toward the shuttle, while the Twi'lek backed up the landing ramp, taking aim. Before the Twi'lek could fire, Aaron gestured with her left hand, and both of the blasters flew from the Twi'lek's hands and landed at Aaron's feet. The Twi'lek mouthed something lost in the muffle of her mask. Aaron stepped over and passed the blasters. The Twi'lek, wide-eyed, turned to flee into the shuttle's compartment. Again, Aaron gestured, and a blast of power went forth from her, slammed into the Twi'lek's back, and drove her hard into the bulkhead. She collapsed within the shuttle's compartment, only her feet sticking out far enough for Zerid to see. Aaron deactivated her blade. She stopped for a moment and lowered her head, thinking. Zerid let himself hope, almost called her name again. But then, she raised her head and walked for the landing ramp, stepping over the corpse of the soldier. Zerid hung his head for a moment, saddened. It was her decision. Her fight. He gathered himself, turned, and shouted at T7.
Get that dragonfly open, T7. It's time to go.
Vrath awoke to the sound of blaster fire, the high-pitched whine of sirens, and the voice on the port speaker system saying something about a fuel leak. He'd taken a sleep tab to put him out, and it took a few moments for his head to clear. He'd fallen asleep in the cockpit. He checked his chrono. Almost dawn, or just after. He'd been out the better part of the night. Something thudded into Razor's hull. A blaster shot.
What in the...
He undimmed the cockpit's transparisteel canopy and looked out on the landing pad. Razor's angle offered him a very small field of vision, so he could see little, merely part of one of the Imperial shuttles docked near him. Strangely, he saw no workers, no Imperial soldiers, no droids. He heard a few more blaster shots from behind the ship. He had no idea what was going on, and had no desire to find out. He did not yet have permission to leave Coruscant, but he would not leave his ship and dock in the midst of a firefight or whatever was happening out there. He figured he'd just take Razor into the air and stay in atmosphere. He put the dull monotone of the spaceport's automated announcement on his in-ship comm.
A hazardous substance spill has occurred in Landing Bay 16B. There is significant danger. Please move rapidly toward the nearest exit. A hazardous substance spill.
On the wall near him, written in large black letters, were the words, Landing Bay 16B. He double-checked to ensure Razor was still sealed tight. It wasn't. The rear door was open. He cursed. He swore he'd closed it. He hit the button to close it, but it still flashed as unsealed and open. Something was keeping it open, or there was a malfunction in the circuit. He would have to close it with the rear switch, or cargo would fall out as he flew. He started Razor's auto-launch sequence, rose, and headed for the rear of the ship. Halfway there, he realized he left his blaster and blades in the cockpit. He stripped them off when he grabbed some shut-eye. No matter. He wouldn't need them. Erin felt lightheaded as she walked up the shuttle's landing ramp. She held her lightsaber hilt in her hand, held anger in her heart. She slowed when the Twi'lek stirred, groaned, and turned over to watch her approach. Erin held up her free hand and almost said, "I won't hurt you," but walled off the words before they escaped her mouth. She did not want to lie. The woman scrabbled backward crabwise, eyes showing no fear, taking Erin in, until she bumped into the bulkhead. She slid up the wall so that she was standing. Erin stopped 2 paces from her. They regarded each other across the limitless gulf of their respective understandings. Outside, the sirens howled. Erin could no longer see Zirid. More important, he could no longer see her. The Twi'lek's eyes fell to Aaron's lightsaber hilt. Erin felt no fear radiating from the woman, just a soft, profound sadness.
"You have come to kill me?"
Erin did not deny it. Her mouth was dry. She belted her own lightsaber, took Master Zalo's in hand.
"I see your anger,"
the Twi'lek said. Erin thought of Master Zalo, and hardened her resolve.
"You don't know me, woman. Do not pretend that you do."
She ignited Master Zalo's lightsaber. The Twi'lek's eyes widened, and a flash of fear cracked her calm facade.
"I don't,"
the Twi'lek acknowledged.
"But I know anger when I see it. I know it quite well."
A sad smile illuminated her face, overcoming the fear in her expression. She was thinking of something or someone other than Erin, and the sadness she radiated increased, sharpened.
"Anger is just pain, renamed," she said. "This I know well too. And sometimes the pain runs too deep. Pain drives you, yes?"
Erin had expected resistance, a fight, a protest, something. Instead, the Twi'lek seemed resigned.
"You will kill me, Jedi? Because of Darth Malgus? Something he did?"
Hearing Malgus's name uttered stoked the heat of Aaron's anger.
"He hurt someone I loved."
The Twi'lek nodded, gave a single short outburst that might have been a pained laugh.
"He hurts even those he himself loves."
She smiled, and her soft voice sounded like rainfall.
"These men and their wars. His name is Veridan, Jedi. And he would kill me if he knew I told you. But names are important."
Erin had to work to keep hold of her anger. The Twi'lek seemed so fragile, so hurt.
"I don't care what his name is. You were there with him, in the attack on the temple. I saw it." "The temple? Ah."
She nodded.
"Yes, I was with him. I love him. I fight at his side. You would do the same."
Erin could not deny it. She would have done the same. She had done the same. The anger she'd carried since feeling Master Zalo's death began to shrink, to drain out of her in the face of the Twi'lek's pain and sadness, in the realization that her own pain was not the moral center of the universe. The loss of her anger startled her. Since his death, she had been nothing but anger. Without it, she felt empty. Pain by another name, the Twi'lek had said. Indeed.
Please be quick, the Twi'lek said. A clean death, yes?
The words sounded not so much like a challenge as a request.
What is your name?
Aaron asked.
Alina,
the Twi'lek said. Aaron stepped toward her. Alina's eyes went to Aaron's blade, but she did not shrink from Aaron's approach. She stared into Aaron's eyes, and Aaron into hers, each measuring the other's pain, the other's loss.
Names are important,
Aaron said. She flipped her grip on the dead master's lightsaber, deactivated the blade, and slammed the pommel against Alina's temple. The Twi'lek collapsed without a sound.
And I won't kill you, Alina.
In so many ways, Alina was already dead. Aaron pitied her. She still felt compelled to avenge Master Zalo, but she could not murder Alina to make Malkus suffer. Master Zalo would never have countenanced it. Aaron could not avenge him by betraying what he stood for. Perhaps he had failed. Perhaps the Order had failed. But both had failed nobly. There was something to that. She remembered the dream she had of Master Zalo, of him standing on the temple's ruins, silently mouthing words at her that she could not then understand. She understood them now. Be true to yourself, he had said. Hadn't Zirid been trying to tell her the same thing all along?
I am sorry, my lord,
Curse said as they hurried through the spaceport.
I assume they had evacuated when we'd not yet had a chance to take a head count.
Save your excuses, Curse,
Malgus said, and resisted the urge to cut the man in two. The long main corridor within the port felt kilometers long. Counters lined it, businesses, even vendor carts, all of them abandoned. Vidscreens sat dark on the walls of lounges and clubs. Smaller corridors branched off the main one, leading to commercial passenger pads, to lifts that led to the large craft staging areas, and to the small craft pads.
Move!
Malgus said to them, and they did. To Curse, he said,
show me where you saw her last.
Curse pointed to a side corridor far ahead, near the end of the main corridor.
It's there, my lord. Pad 16B, on the left.
Malgus thought 16B was close to the launch doors he had seen open upon his arrival at the spaceport. He augmented his speed with the Force and blazed along the hall, leaving the soldiers far behind. The walls, signs, and floor were a blur to him as he sped toward the landing pad, toward Alina. T7 had the rear hatch open on the Dragonfly and was still plugged into the control panel. Zirid spent a few long moments turning his head from the Dragonfly to the Imperial shuttle where Aaron had disappeared with the Twi'lek, then back again. He finally started to head for the Dragonfly, but Aaron's voice pulled him around.
Zirid!
He turned to see Aaron emerge from the shuttle, carrying the still body of the Twi'lek in her arms. Zirid could not tell whether the Twi'lek was dead or alive. He walked toward Aaron slowly, his eyes not on the Twi'lek, but on Aaron.
Do I want to know?
He dreaded the answer.
I didn't kill her, Zirid. It was important to me that you knew that.
Zirid let himself breathe.
I'm glad, Aaron. Then you'll come with me now.
He jerked a thumb over his shoulder.
T7 has the Dragonfly opened.
I can't, Zirid. But I'm all right now. Do you understand?
I don't. No.
Aaron opened her mouth to speak, stopped, and cocked her head, as if she'd heard something from far off.
He's coming, she said.
The hairs on the back of Zirid's neck rose.
Who's coming? Malgus?
Aaron knelt and laid the Twi'lek down as gently as she might a newborn child. The siren suddenly stopped wailing. The sound cut off as if by a razor. The unexpected silence felt ominous. Zirid eyed the open double doors of the landing pad. A dark corridor stretched beyond them. Aaron rose, closed her eyes, inhaled.
"Go, Zirid," she said.
"I'm not leaving,"
Zirid said, and drew his other blaster. He ran his tongue over lips gone dry. She opened her eyes and grabbed him with her gaze.
"You are leaving, and you're leaving now, Z-Man. Think of your daughter. Go, right now. Go! Be a farmer."
She smiled and pushed him away. He stared into her face, knowing she was right. He could not make Era an orphan, not even for Aaron. Still, he was unwilling to leave her. He stepped closer to her, and her expression softened. She reached up and touched his face.
"Go."
Driven by nothing more than impulse, he grabbed her by the shoulders and kissed her full on the mouth. She did not resist, even returned it. He held her away from him at arm's length.
"You are a fool, Aaron Lanier," he said.
"Maybe."
He turned and headed for the dragonfly. The feel of her lips lingered on his. A ghost of softness he hoped would haunt him forever. He only wished he had kissed her longer. He imagined her eyes on him, and he dared not look back for fear of losing his will to leave. He thought of the hollow of Era he used to keep on Fat Man. Her smile, her laugh. Thought of his promise to Nat that he would not take unnecessary chances. Hard as it was, he kept his back turned to Aaron Lanier.
"Get aboard, T-7,
he said as he walked up the landing ramp. T-7 beeped a sad negative.
"You're not coming?"
Again, a sad negative. Zirid patted the droid on his head.
"You are a brave one. Thank you for your help. Take care of Aaron."
T-7 whistled an affirmative, followed that with a somber farewell, and wheeled away from the dragonfly. The ship's engines were already winding up. T-7 must have started the launch sequence. Vrath picked his way through Razor's narrow corridors until he reached the rear compartment, which he converted from troop carrier to cargo hold. Stacked crates magnetically sealed to the deck dotted the hold, forming a rat's maze. He hurried through it to the rear door. The firefight outside seemed to have abated, so he allowed himself to relax. Zirid watched T-7 move away. He hit the control panel to close the rear door, and it began to rise. He waited until the latches sealed. Still thinking of Aaron, he put his hand on the cold metal of the door. The dragonfly lurched as it rose on its thrusters. He needed to get to the cockpit. He could not have the autopilot flying the ship when the Imperials started shooting. He hurried through the converted cargo bay made into a labyrinth by the many storage crates that dotted it. Rounding a corner, he nearly bumped into another man. It took a moment for recognition to dawn. The small frame, the neatly parted dark hair, the deep sockets with their dead eyes, the thin mouth. It was the man from Carson's Park. It was the man who had betrayed Zirid and Aaron to the Sith. It was the man who knew about Era and Nat.
"You,"
Vrath Zizor said.
"Me,"
Zirid affirmed. Aaron watched the dragonfly lift off, missing Zirid already. She tried to summon the rage that had brought her to Coruscant to face Malgus, but she no longer felt the same heat. She reached into her pocket, found the bead from the Nautilin bracelet, held it between forefinger and thumb. She would face Malgus. She had to. But she would face him as her master would have wished, with calmness in her heart. She stood over Alina's body and waited. Malgus's presence pressed against her as he drew nearer. His anger went before him like a storm. Mulgus rushed through the large double doors and into the landing bay. Vrath Zizor's ship, Razor, rose on its thrusters toward the open roof doors. Two Imperial shuttles sat idle on the landing pad.
Elena!
He shouted, hating himself for his vulnerability, but unable to contain the shout. He reached out with the Force as Razor continued its rise, tried to take it in his mental grasp. Its ascent slowed. He held forth both of his arms, made claws of his hands, and shouted with frustration as he sought to hold back the power of the ship's thrusters. He felt a tightness in his mind, the string of his power being drawn taut, stretching, stretching. He would not release the ship. Its thrusters began to whine. He held it, teeth gritted, sweat soaking his body, his breath a dry rattle through his respirator. And then, the string snapped, and the ship flew free, lifting clear of the roof doors. He roared his rage as the ship's engines fired and is headed for the heavens. Seething, he activated his wrist chrono.
Jord, the Spice Runner's dropship has just left Liston spaceport. Elena may be aboard. Secure it with a tractor beam and detain everyone aboard.
The hum of an activating lightsaber cut off his words. Another followed it. He looked across the landing pad and saw Aaron Lanier, a lightsaber in each hand, standing over the body of Elena. Chapter 13. The pure hate and raw rage pouring off Mulgus struck Aaron like a physical blow. She braced herself against it as she might a hailstorm. She realized how strongly he felt for the Twi'lek, how he sublimated all of his emotion for her into hate and rage. He ignited his lightsaber, and his eyes and the plates of his armor reflected its red glow. He reached a hand behind him, made a sharp cutting gesture, and the doors to the hangar slammed closed. Another gesture, and the emergency locks turned into place.
Just us,
he said, his voice as rough as a rasp. He had not taken his eyes from Elena. Aaron indicated the Twi'lek.
She is alive, Sif, and I know your feelings for her.
You know nothing,
Mulgus said, and took a slow step toward her.
Let the dropship go. Give the order, or I will kill her.
You lie.
Aaron placed Master Zalo's blade at Elena's neck. Raw emotion surged out of Mulgus, a gust of rage.
I promise you I will do it,
Aaron said. Mulgus's free hand clenched into a fist.
If you have harmed her permanently, I will see that you suffer. I promise you that.
Aaron understood less and less about Mulgus with each word he spoke. Still, she maintained her bluff.
Give the order, Mulgus.
Mulgus glared at her, snarled, spoke into his comlink.
Jord, belay my previous order. The dropship is to be allowed to leave the system.
My lord?
Do it, Jord!
Yes, my lord.
Mulgus walked toward Aaron, the slow movements of a hunter that smelled prey.
And now, Jedi, you cannot leave here.
I don't want to leave, Mulgus.
His eyes smiled.
No. You want to kill me. Need to, yes. Because of your master.
The feelings the words mined out of the dark parts of her soul felt uncomfortably close to the rage flowing from Mulgus. A day earlier, and her feelings might have mirrored his. That they didn't, she owed to Elena. And Zirid. And Master Zalo.
I wanted to hurt you, Sif. Hurt you by hurting her. but I won't add to her pain. She suffers enough already.
Mulgus stopped in his advance. His eyes went to the Twi'lek, and to her surprise, Aaron felt something akin to pity radiate from him. Just a flash, quickly washed away by hate.
Enough words,
he said, returning his gaze to Aaron.
Make your attempt, Aaron Lanier. I am here.
He discarded his cape, stood up straight, and saluted her with his lightsaber. She hefted her lightsaber, Master Zalo's lightsaber, felt the weight of both in her hands. She fell into the lines of the Force, at peace, calm, still heart, still mind. She had trained in dual lightsaber combat when she had been a Padawan, but she rarely fought with two blades in a genuine combat situation. She would now, here, today. She thought it fitting that she do so. She did not wait for Mulgus. She bounded across the hangar, her speed augmented by the Force, the lines of her blades leaving a blur of light in their wake. Mulgus held his ground, blade ready. She stabbed low with her primary blade, high with her secondary. Mulgus leapt over both, flipped, landed behind her, and cross-cut for her neck. She ducked under it, while spinning into a reverse leg sweep that caught his feet and tripped him. When he hit the ground, she rose, turned, raised both blades, and drove them down in a parallel overhand slash. Mulgus somersaulted backward, and Aaron's blades cut gashes in the floor of the hangar. Sparks flew. Mulgus bounced up from the somersault and loosed a telekinetic blast that lifted Aaron from her feet and blew her across the hangar. She slammed into one of the shuttle's bulkheads, but used the Force to cushion the blow so that it did no harm. Bouncing off the cool metal, she charged Mulgus. As she ran, she cast first her own lightsaber at Mulgus, then Master Zalo's, using the Force to guide both. The attack caught Mulgus unprepared, and Aaron's blade bit into his armor. Sparks flew, and Mulgus winced, snarled with pain. He ducked under Master Zalo's blade, and Aaron recalled both to her hands as she ran. The moment she had them, she cast them both at Mulgus again. But this time he was ready. Augmenting his speed with the Force, he flipped high into the air and out of the way of both. She anticipated his movement, however, bounded forward to cut him off, and landed a flying kick in his chest. He used the Force to diminish the blow's impact, but it drove him back a step, and she heard his breath hitch through the sound of his respirator. He recovered, roared, raised his blade high to cut her in two, and brought it down. But she had already summoned her own blade back to her hand and interposed it in a parry. Mulgus's strength drove her to her knees. She held out her other hand and pulled Master Zalo's blade to her hand, stabbed for his stomach with it. Mulgus sidestepped the stab, though it skinned his armor and showered sparks. He pushed her blade to the side with his own and kicked her in the face. The strength behind the blow blew through her defenses, caused her to see stars, loose teeth, and sent her head over heels backward. She landed on her knees, stunned, seeing double. She rose, swayed on her feet, seeing four blades in her hands rather than two. Something was in her mouth, and she spat it out. A tooth, the root forked and bloody.
You are a child to hate,
Mulgus said, his tone incongruously soft as he stalked toward her.
Your anger barely smolders. You are a fraction of what you could be.
She needed time to recover her senses, some distance from Mulgus. She backflipped high into the air and landed atop the Imperial shuttle. Her mind was beginning to clear.
Your master was also misguided. He thought to defeat me with calm, but failed. You thought to defeat me with anger, but carried too little, despite your loss.
Aaron's vision began to clear. She felt more herself.
Be grateful for that, Jedi. Anger exacts its own price.
Again, she felt the odd sense of sympathy or pity adulterating the otherwise pure hate flowing from Mulgus. His eyes went to Alina, her body crumpled on the landing pad's floor. As Aaron prepared to leap at Malgus, he held forth a hand, almost casually, and lightning sizzled through the space between them. Aaron interposed her lightsabers, but the power in the lightning exceeded anything she had felt from Malgus before. It blasted through her defenses, and both lightsabers flew from her hands. The lightning seized her, lifted her up, and threw her from the top of the shuttle. As she flew toward the deck, she smelled burning flesh, heard screaming, realized it was her flesh, her screams. She hit the ground hard, and her head bounced off the ground. Sparks erupted in her brain. Pain! And everything went dark. Zerid's military training responded faster than his thoughts. He made a knife of his right hand and drove it at the smaller man's throat. But Vrath, too, must have been trained. A sweeping side block with his left hand threw Zerid's arm out wide. Then Vrath seized the arm by the wrist, shifted his feet to get him closer to Zerid, and rotated into a hip toss. Zerid saw it coming, rode with the throw, hit the ground in a roll, and came up with his E9 drawn and aimed. A kick from Vrath sent the blaster flying, and it discharged into the bulkhead. Vrath followed the sidekick into a spinning back kick, but Zerid anticipated it, took the blow to the side to capture the leg, stood, and drove his fist into the man's nose. Bone crunched, and blood exploded outward. Vrath flailed wildly with his left hand, driving his straightened fingers into Zerid's throat, a blow that would have killed him if the man had been able to put more into it. As it was, the blow caused Zerid to release Vrath's leg and recoil. Zerid reached behind his back for his second blaster and started to pull it loose, but Vrath charged him before Zerid could bring it to bear, drove Zerid up against one of the cargo crates. The sharp point of the crate's corner pressed into Zerid's back, and he grunted at the pain. Vrath's hand snaked around Zerid's, caught him by the wrist, levered it, and slammed it against the crate. The second blaster fell to the floor, and the man kicked it away. Zerid grunted with effort and shoved Vrath away from him. They regarded each other from 3 paces, both gasping. Vrath's eyes watered. Blood poured out of his nose. Zerid had trouble breathing through his damaged trachea.
"Guess it had to come to this,"
the man said, his voice made nasal by his broken nose.
"Didn't it, Zerid Kor?"
He covered first one nostril, then the other, blowing out blood and snot in turn.
"I'm Vrath, by the way. Vrath Zizor."
Zerid barely heard him. He took the time Vrath had used to clear his nose, to recover his own breath, and eye the floor for either blaster. Both weapons had disappeared under crates during the scrum. Vrath felt the damage to his nose with a 2-finger pincer.
"What are you? Harriers? Commandos?"
Zerid's breathing cleared, and the 2 men began to circle.
"Havoc Squadron,"
Zerid said, sizing up the smaller man.
"First in,"
Vrath said, reciting one of the squad's mottos.
"You?"
Zerid asked.
"Imperial Sniper Corps."
"A skulker,"
Zerid said. Vrath lost his smile at the insult.
"I killed over 50 men in a Republic uniform, Kor. You'll be just another number to me."
"We'll see,"
Zerid said, as calm as the quiet moments before a thunderstorm. Vrath fainted, drawing a response from Zerid. Vrath grinned, his teeth bloody with runoff from his nose.
"Jumpy, yeah?"
Zerid watched for an opening as they circled. When he saw one, he feinted high and lunged in low, thinking to take Vrath down, where Zerid's size would give him the advantage. Vrath sprawled to avoid the takedown, but Zerid used his weight to drive him up against the bulkhead. Vrath threw a short elbow, grazing Zerid's head, another catching him on the cheek. Grunting, Zerid pushed himself away from the smaller man to get some room to work. When he had it, still holding Vrath's arms, he put a knee into his abdomen. Another! Another! Vrath grunted, turned his body to keep his hips in the way. Vrath's fingers slid up Zerid's shoulder to his face, toward his eyes. Zerid shook his head, but Vrath's fingers found the sockets, started to burrow. Zirid shoved him away and backed off, blinking, covering his retreat with a front kick. Vrath lunged at him, seized him around the thighs, lifted him off the ground, and threw him back down. Zirid's head hit the deck hard, and he saw stars. Vrath squirmed atop him, fast, elusive, his arms and legs everywhere, wrapping Zirid up. Soon he had his body atop Zirid, elbows and fists poured down, one after another. Zirid took a blow to the cheek, the temple, another to the cheek, the top of his head. The last opened him up, and blood ran warm and slick down his pate, smeared his face, darkened Vrath's elbow. Desperate, he reached for Vrath's arms, but the man was too fast, and the blood made his skin slick, more difficult to get a grip. Zirid wrapped his arms around Vrath's back, pulled him close to disallow him the room he needed to ply his elbows. And then, Vrath made a mistake. Trying to pull himself back up to loose more elbows, he put his face above Zirid's with only a few centimeters between them. Zirid threw his head up and slammed his brow into Vrath's already broken nose. Vrath cried out in pain, instinctively recoiled. Taking advantage of the opportunity, Zirid seized one of Vrath's wrists, rolled him over, threw his legs on either side of Vrath's shoulder, extended Vrath's arm, then extended his own body to lever the arm at the elbow. Vrath screamed as the hyperextension turned into an audible break. The arm went loose in Zirid's grasp. The joint shattered. He released Vrath's elbow, rolled and bounded to his feet. Vrath, his face twisted in pain, crawled for where the E9 had disappeared under a crate. Zirid cut him off, picked him off the floor, and shoved him hard toward the bulkhead. Vrath careened into the metal wall, off kilter. He tried to catch himself with his broken arm, but it just hung limp from the joint, and he caught the side of his head flush. His eyes rolled, and he went down in a heap. Zirid jumped atop him, punched him square in the eye, thinking he was only stunned. But the man stayed limp beneath him. Blood dripped from Zirid's head onto Vrath's face. Gasping, Zirid checked Vrath's pulse. Still alive. All at once, the adrenaline that had fueled him during the combat drained out of him. His entire body ached. His breath came ragged, and he had no strength. Stabs of pain in his face and head echoed each beat of his heart. The entire fight had taken maybe 40 seconds. He felt as if he'd been beaten for hours. He stared down at Vrath, wondering what to do with him. He searched the man's pants, jacket, coat. He found several IDs and other personal items. He also found flex binders. He flipped Vrath over and pulled his arms behind him. He felt the bones in the broken arm grind together, and Vrath groaned.
"Sorry," Zirid said.
There was nothing he could do about the arm. Once he had the man's arms secured, he slung him over his shoulders and carried him on shaky legs through the ship to the cockpit. A dragonfly had no brig, and there was no way Zirid was letting Vrath out of his sight. By the time he reached the cockpit, the ship had cleared the spaceport and angled upward for the atmosphere. Zirid studied the instrumentation. His face was swelling, and his eye was damaged from Vrath's fingers, so he had to squint. He took off his shirt and used it to apply pressure to his head wound. He didn't want to bleed all over the controls. A weapons belt with a GH-22 blaster and several knives lay on the pilot's seat. Vrath's weapons, presumably. Zirid belted them on and sat. He'd never flown a Dragonfly-class dropship before, but he could fly any criffing thing that tramped the stars. He'd need to get past the Imperial blockade and get into a hyperspace lane.
"Time to dance between the raindrops," he said, and disengaged the autopilot.
He looked down out of the canopy at the spaceport far below, wondering what had happened with Erin. He'd have paid a lot of credits to have her beside him right then. Erin opened her eyes. Mulgus stood over her, his bloodshot eyes fixed on her face. He held the Twi'lek still unconscious in his arms. He also held both of Erin's lightsabers. His own lightsaber hilt hung from his belt. He had not killed her. She had no idea why. He stared down at her, and she felt his ambivalence. He was struggling with something.
Take them and go,
he said, and dropped both of her lightsabers. They hit the floor in a clatter.
Take the shuttle. I will ensure you have safe passage away from Coruscant.
She did not move. The lightsabers were centimeters from her hand. His eyes narrowed.
Unless your need to avenge your master requires you to die, you should do as I command, Jedi.
She pushed herself up with one hand, took both of the lightsabers in the other. The metal was cool in her palm.
Why?
Because you spared her,
he said, his voice soft behind the respirator.
Were our situations reversed, I would not have done so. Because your presence made me aware of something I should have known long ago.
Erin rose, still cautious, and clipped the lightsabers to her belt.
We will be leaving Coruscant, you know. The Empire, I mean. All that remains is to sign the treaty. Then we will have peace. Does that please you?
Please me?
She still did not understand. She inventoried her injuries. Lots of bruises and lacerations. Nothing broken. She inventoried her soul. Nothing broken there, either. She looked into Malgus's face. She did not know what to say.
Perhaps we will meet again, under other circumstances.
If we meet again, Erin Lanier, I will kill you as I did your master. Do not mistake my actions for mercy. I am repaying a debt. When you leave here, it is paid.
Erin licked her lips, stared him in the face, and nodded.
Do you know your own order betrayed you, Jedi? They informed us that you might be coming here.
Erin was not surprised, but the betrayal still hurt.
I no longer belong to an order, she said, her throat tight.
He laughed, the sound like a hacking cough.
Then we have more in common than anger. Now go.
She did not understand, and resigned herself to never understanding. She turned, still disbelieving, and headed for the shuttle. T7 emerged from hiding near the ship and beeped a question. She had no answer. Together, they boarded the shuttle. When she reached the cockpit and sat, she realized that she was shaking.
Still heart, still mind,
she said, and felt calmer. Exhaling, she engaged the thrusters. She had no idea where she would go. As the blue of Coruscant's sky gave way to the black of space, Zerith started to sweat. He had the sensors for Imperial ships. They would have detected it by now. A cruiser showed on the screen. Maybe Valor? Maybe another one. He wheeled the dropship away from it, accelerated for the nearest hyperlane. He just wanted to jump somewhere, anywhere. A beep from the panel drew his attention. It took him a moment to realize it was a hail. It took him another moment to figure out how to operate it. He slapped the button, opening the channel. If nothing else, he'd curse out the Imperials before they shot him down.
Dropship Razor, you are cleared to leave.
Zerid assumed it had to be a ruse, a bad joke. But he saw nothing on the scanner, and the cruiser did not move to interdict. He flew for the hyperlane. He let the Navicomp calculate a course and tried to believe his luck. Vrath's voice startled him.
Not bad, Commando. I'm impressed.
Impressing you isn't my concern, Skulker.
Vrath chuckled, but it turned into a cough and a wince.
There are pain pills in the med bay. You mind?
Later, Zerid said.
It hurts pretty bad, Marine.
Good.
It's just business, Kor.
Zerid thought of Era, Nat,
Aaron.
Right. Business.
He'd had all he could take of business.
We're done as far as I'm concerned,
Brath said.
I was hired to stop that Engspice from getting to Coruscant. I did that, which means we're done. I report back, and we never see each other again. I'd like my ship back, though.
Zerud resisted the urge to punch a restrained man. He was behaving as if they'd just had a friendly sparring match, that they'd go out for drinks later.
The exchange probably won't be as forgiving, though, eh?
Brath said.
I hear they don't tolerate lost shipments. You and your family are gonna have a hard row there.
Brath's words made Zerud's breath hitch. Hearing them changed everything. His knuckles turned white on the stick as options played out in his mind. Adrenaline filled him to his eyes. He stared straight out the cockpit window.
They don't know I have a family.
Not yet, Brath said. But they will. They always do.
Too late, Brath seemed to realize he'd stepped on a mine. He tried to chuckle it away, but Zerud heard the fear behind the laughter.
Or maybe they won't. I'm just talking here.
You talk too much,
Zerud said, while he hardened his expression, hardened his mind. The alchemy of necessity distilled his list of options down to one. He put himself on autopilot and stood.
On your feet, Brath.
When the man did not stand right off, Zerud pulled him roughly to his feet. Brath groaned with pain.
Easy there, Marine. Pain meds now, yeah?
He sounded doubtful.
Walk, Zerud said.
To where?
Zerud stuck the GH-22 in his back.
Move!
Reluctantly, Brath let Zerud push him through the corridors of the ship. The man moved slowly, as if he knew Zerud's intent, and Zerud had to push him along. A few turns, a few corridors, and Zerud saw an airlock door. He steered Brath to it, stopped before it.
Turn around.
Brath did. His face was blotchy, but whether from the beating or from fear, Zerud could not tell.
This is about your daughter, yeah? Well, I already told my people, Kor. They already know.
Zerud heard the high pitch of a lie in Vrath's tone.
A lie? You already told me you didn't. You said not yet.
He moved Vrath out of the way with the blaster and activated the internal doors on the airlock. They unsealed and slid open with a hiss. A red light set into the ceiling lit up and began to spin. Zerud showed him the blaster.
You want this?
He nodded at the airlock.
Or that?
Brath looked at the weapon, the airlock, swallowed hard.
It doesn't have to go this way, Kor. I won't tell anyone about you or your family. You can even keep the ship.
I can't take that chance.
Brath tried to smile, but it looked like a death grimace.
Come on, Kor. If I say I won't talk, I won't talk. I'm nothing if not a man of my word.
Zerud thought of the promise he'd made to Nat, that he'd take no unnecessary chances.
Yeah, me too.
Desperation crept into Vrath's voice. He shifted on his feet.
You have to bear this, Kor. This'll make you a murderer. Kill a man with his own weapon. You want that weight?
Zerud knew what he was doing. Or at least he thought so.
I can carry it. And I don't need a lecture about murder from a skulker.
Fear made Vrath's eyes water.
That was war, Kor. Think about it. Think hard.
I have. Pick. Or I pick for you. Just another number, right?
Vrath stared into Zerud's face. Maybe he saw the blankness, the resolve.
To hell with you, Kor! To hell with you!
Zerud pushed him into the airlock.
I could have killed her, Kor. Both of them. Back at the park on Volta. You know I could have, but I didn't.
No,
Zerud said.
You didn't. He activated the seal, and the door started to close.
I wish I had killed him now! I wish I had!
Zerid stopped the door, a sudden flash of anger rekindling his strength. He reached into the airlock and grabbed Vrath by the shirt, shook him.
If you had harmed her, this would be coming to you with a sharp blade and a slow touch. You hear me, Skulker? Do you?
He kicked Vrath in the stomach, doubling the man over with the blow. While Vrath gasped for breath, Zerid reactivated the door, and it sealed shut. Vrath stared at him through the tiny transparasteel window, all wild eyes, snarls, and teeth. Zerid hit the button to evacuate the airlock. The warning alarm wailed. He gave one more glance at Vrath, saw the fear there, then he turned and walked back toward the cockpit. Murderer. That's what he was. The siren stopped, and he felt a soft rumble as the external airlock door opened. A pit opened in his stomach. Emotion, nameless and raw, caused his eyes to water. He wiped them clear. He was a murderer, and he felt heavy already. But he would carry it. For Nat. For Era. He'd expected he'd carry it for the rest of his life, and the weight would never diminish. He'd killed men before, but not like that. Not like he killed Vrath. For the first time, he understood. Really understood why Eren had returned to Coruscant. He prayed to gods he did not believe in that she reconsidered what she had come to do. She felt things too keenly to feel what he felt. She could never carry it. It would destroy her. Better she should die. All of a sudden, he just wanted to sleep. He overrode the Navicomp's random course and plugged in the coordinates to Volta. His hands shook the whole time. In moments, Razor jumped into hyperspace. He had always flown alone, but he'd never felt alone in the cockpit. Not until that moment. Sitting back in the chair, he tried to sleep, and tried not to dream. Mulgus watched the shuttle, piloted by Eren Lanier, rise on its thrusters. He raised Jard on the comm.
A shuttle is lifting off from Liston. It is also clear to leave Coruscant space.
Yes, my lord, Jard answered.
Mulgus could have broken his word to the Jedi, could have shot Eren Lanier from the sky. But he would not. He kept his promises. But he realized more than ever that the Jedi were too dangerous for him to allow them to exist. They were to the Sith what Alina was to him. An example of peace, comfort, and therefore a temptation to weakness. Angrel did not see it. The Emperor did not see it. But Mulgus saw it. And he knew what he must do. He must destroy the Jedi, utterly. He knelt beside Alina, cradled her head in his left arm. He studied her face, its symmetry, the line of her jaw, the deep-set eyes, the perfectly formed nose. He remembered the first time he'd seen her, a cowed, beaten slave barely out of her teens. He'd killed her owner for his brutality, taken her into his house, trained her in combat. She had been his companion, his lover, his conscience ever since. Her eyes fluttered open, focused. She smiled.
Verathyn, you are my rescuer.
Yes.
Where is the woman?
Alina asked.
The Jedi.
She is gone. She will never hurt you again.
She leaned her head back into his arm, closed her eyes, and sighed contentedly.
I knew you loved me.
I do,
he acknowledged, and her smile widened. He felt tears forming in his eyes, his weakness made manifest. She opened her eyes, saw the tears, reached up an arm to put a hand on his cheek.
What is wrong, my love?
That I love you is what is wrong, Elena.
Ferritin.
He steeled himself, stood, ignited his lightsaber, and drove it through her heart. Her eyes widened, never left his face, pierced him. Her mouth opened in a surprised gasp. She seemed as if she wanted to say something, but no sound emerged from her mouth. And then it was over, and she was gone. He deactivated his blade. He could no longer afford a conscience or a weakness. Not if he was to do what must be done. He could serve only one master. He stood over her body until his tears dried. He resolved that he'd never shed another. He'd had to destroy what he loved, and he knew he would have to do it again. First the Jedi, then... Behind him, Curse and his soldiers were worrying at the landing bay doors, trying to cut their way in. Mulgus knelt and picked up her limp body. She felt as light as gauze in his arms. He would give her a funeral with honor, and then he would begin. His vision on Korriban had shown him a galaxy in flames, but it was not just the Republic that required cleansing by fire. Epilogue. Night and controlled rage wrapped Mulgus. His anger smoldered always now, and his thoughts mirrored the Calignus air. He had taken a ship in secret from the unknown regions where he was currently stationed and made his way to the planet. No one knew he had come. He focused on keeping his force signature suppressed. He did not want anyone to learn of his presence prematurely. A sliver of moon cut a narrow slit in the dark sky, painted everything in grays and blacks. The stone wall of the compound, 8 meters tall, rose before him, its surface as rough and pitted as Mulgus's mien. Drawing on the force, he augmented a leap that carried him up and over the wall. He landed in a well-tended garden courtyard. Sculpted dwarf trees and bushes cast strange, malformed shadows in the moonlight. The gentle sound of a fountain mixed with the night hum of insects. Mulgus moved through the garden, a deeper darkness among the shadows, his boots soft on the grass. A few lights lit the windows of the rectangular manse that sat in the center of the grounds. The manse, the garden, the fountain, all of it looked similar to some soft world in the Republic. Some decadent Jedi sanctuary where so-called Force scholars pondered peace and sought tranquility. Mulgus knew it was folly. Empires and the men who ruled empires could not stay sharp when surrounded by comfort, by peace, by love. Low voices sounded from ahead, barely audible in the stillness. Mulgus did not slow and made no attempt to hide his approach as he emerged from the darkness of the garden. They saw him immediately, 2 Imperial troopers in half armor. They leveled their blaster rifles.
Huna!
He drew on the force, gestured as if he were shooing away insects, and sent both of the troopers flying against the wall of the manse, hard enough to crack bone. Both sagged to the ground, unmoving. The black eyes of their helmets stared at Mulgus. He walked between their bodies and through the sliding doors of the manse, reminded of his attack on the Jedi Temple back on Coruscant. Except then, Elena had accompanied him. It seemed a lifetime ago. Thinking of Elena blew oxygen on the embers of his anger. In life, Elena had been his weakness, a tool to be exploited by rivals. In death, she had become his strength, her memory the lens of his rage. He resided in the calm eye of a storm of hate. Power churned around him, within him. He did not feel as if he were drawing on the Force, using it. He felt as if he were the Force, as if he had merged with it. He had evolved. Nothing split his loyalties any longer. He served the Force and only the Force, and his understanding of it increased daily. The growing power whirling around him.